How does this happen? How does a team with this much experience, this much expectation, go out like that? A season full of promise ended by High Point, the team that's playing right now, which is why this show is happening right now. It's just not acceptable. This one is definitely going to sting for a while. I'm Rajiv. He's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers! Ring one up!
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Saturday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we've got a lot to unpack because what we watched on Thursday was one of the most stunning and frustrating losses we've seen from Wisconsin basketball in a long time. Or was it? We're going to break this thing down from every angle. What went wrong against High Point, where the game flipped, the decisions, the execution, and the bigger question that now won't go away. Why does this keep happening in March? And then later in the show, we'll shift gears to Wisconsin football, where spring practice is underway, and we're already starting to hear some early buzz and storylines coming to light. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Thank you so much for your endless support of the show. This one's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. We are doing this on a Saturday tonight because I'm not going to watch the High Point game. It's not on my TV. I don't care what's happening with it. I'm not going to watch it. I can't stomach it. So this is what we're doing the show instead, to talk about it when we should have been watching our Badgers play right now. A couple quick programming notes before we get going. First of all, you guys, many of you know I'm having a baby this week, so that's pretty exciting. So you'll see a little bit less of me. I'm still going to do the Sunday shows, but I probably won't be appearing on Lockdown for the next few weeks, or any midweek shows here. Whatever Justin does with recruiting and football stuff, he'll do that. But I'll still do the Sunday stuff. But it's going to be different in my house going forward. And also, before we touch on anything bad, we do need to talk a little bit about something really great. The Wisconsin women's hockey team has once again advanced to the national title game. They will face Ohio State tomorrow, and the men's selection show is tomorrow. Wisconsin expected to be a 3 seed, which should be pretty great. That'll be fun to be able to talk about a tournament we might actually win something in. I don't know. But the women, of course, our women's volleyball team, A1 top-notch, our women's hockey team, A1 top notch. Our men's basketball team, Justin, is
I was gonna say the men's hockey team is very similar to the basketball team in that they can be incredible one game and then, well, let's just say dog shit the next.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, so we're gonna just start here. We have to start here. It's one of the most painful losses I've really experienced. And it's because I feel like there was just so much more expectation this season. Another 5 seed, we lose to another 12 in the first round. That's the third straight year we've lost in our home whites. And yes, that means as the higher seed 3 years in a row, two of them in the first round to double-digit 12 seeds. And of course, last year to BYU. Simply put, man, this is horrendous. I'm still seething from this game. I haven't really talked to you like too much in person other than through text. So I want to know your initial reactions. I know you were very heated after the game. I did get those text messages, but where are you at now, 48 hours later, as we, you know, sit here today?
Well, I mean, my perspective on this is pretty much this. We took the one thing that wasn't broken, or that was like the biggest point of emphasis under Bo Ryan, which was defense, and chucked that out the window when guard took over. And we got all this talking about how we needed to, you know, update the offense and bring it into a more fast pace, you know, downhill kind of attack. And what has been the thing that has lost us these games the last 3 years? It's been defense. Inability to stop anyone from getting into the paint and being able to create. They hit big threes down the stretch in this game. The whole reason we lost this game was because we could not contain Martin at all. He did whatever he wanted this entire game, and every time Boyd would go do something good, Martin would come downhill and do something, whether it was an assist or just being able to get in the paint and create for himself. And that can't happen. Like, you've got to be able to at least be adequate on defense. And we just, every time we came down the court, we gave it right back. And that's been a problem under guard for the longest time here. Like, we never seem to be able to get stops when we truly need them since he's been the head coach. And that's the biggest difference between him and Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan's teams were far better defensively.
You know, we wanted Greg Gard to adapt. He did. He just adapted in a certain way, and that's okay. But whatever he's doing to win these games, it's not working. It's not working because, it's so crappy to think that such a great season, honestly, 14-6 in a conference that is so loaded right now. I mean, hey, look at the Big Ten teams in the tournament. Other than us and Ohio State, everyone's looking pretty damn good, but not us, of course, because we can't get by the worst team net-wise on our entire schedule. I haven't confirmed that. I think Oregon might be lower than them, but this is one of the worst teams we've played all season. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, there's no problem.
Because, much like Oregon, we lost.
Right, exactly. Much like Oregon, we lost because we find ways to give it up. What really pissed me off the most is we had multiple chances in this game where we were up 8, we were up 10, and we couldn't ever put the killer blow down, right? We were up 8 in the second half for like 3 minutes. We didn't score a point. And then he hits the logo 3 that makes it 65-70. It was 62-70 for a solid few minutes, and we could have run on an easy 6-0 run, 7-0 run there, put the game out of reach. But every single time we had the opportunity, it's like the players were like, we're good. Let's just take the foot off the gas a little bit here. Let's not worry about it. We got this team. And then that team hits one shot. And what happens when the team like that hits one shot? They get confidence. They get excited. They feel like they can win the game. You need to put these teams out of their misery. You cannot let them hang around and do what they're going to do. It started when it was 15-5. Same thing happened then. It started to happen again early in the second half, happened again late in the second half. No matter what happened, we could never just push it up a little bit. And the thing is, we clearly have the ability to do that. We clearly have that. First half, John Blackwell, very good. Second half, don't know what happened. The John Blackwell that we were a little pissed off about for a while.
I have a take on him that I wasn't in love. Like, I thought the scoring was there, but there were lapses with him throughout this game. And Ryan showed us a clip from the game that was just horrific. That final shot that Boyd came down and got blocked on, Blackwell just wanders into the paint and drags his man down there to be able to make a defensive play. It's like, stand on the three-point line. Just stand on the damn three-point line. Like, at most, then he's standing at the top of the free throw line, having to cover Blackwell so he's not sitting there wide open. Instead, he drags his man down there, so you have a 6'7 guy or whatever that's standing there waiting for Boyd to drive into him. So many stupid mental lapses in this game. And he had another one, that back cut, where he was just standing there in the paint, wasn't down in a defensive stance, that it's like, you know, if you have your hands ready on this, you probably can make at least a deflection on it. Instead, you're standing up, just kind of wandering through the paint, and you get beat backdoor on a play. And then we had a couple other ones down the stretch where there was some mental lapses where it's just like, this is, you lose games like this when you do this. Like, you can't afford like that other back cut where we got beat down the lane where the guy was wide open. Like, you guys can't afford to do this. At this point in time in the game, you have to be locked in defensively. You cannot give away free points. And that's exactly what you did in a game where one of the ugliest three-point strokes I've ever seen goes off, you know, for 4 straight threes. And it's like, yeah, they did what they had to, and it was shocking with how, you know, that he hit those shots all in a row. But it is what it is. Like, you guys can't afford to have a letdown at that point in the game. You should be playing the best defense you're playing the entire game at that point. And I realize he hit the shot at half court, but you guys, like, man, it just, there's too many times in this game where, like, we wouldn't get back on defense in transition and they would get to the rim. Like, there's just so many times where defensively this team infuriates me. And we have games or streaks of games where we're really good. And then we'll have a game where it just seems like nobody's locked in. And this was one of those games. It seemed like at time, I said during the game we were watching it, I'm like, this team wants to get to the rim. They're not like a huge three-point shooting team. Why the hell are you rushing the three-point line? Just pack it in and make them have to shoot jumpers. Like, this is a team that lives at the free throw line. Instead, you're blitzing the three-point line, and they're getting by you constantly. And what's happening? They're getting to the free throw line. They're getting drives and scoring. And then that's when the three-point shooting starts to hurt you, because they shot well enough that it ended up stinging you in the end.
I mean, they, I thought the first few minutes we played extremely well. Like, we were doing all those things. We were letting them shoot. We were blocking up the lane. We were not fouling them, which I thought was really critical, because this team definitely loves to get you in foul trouble. They shoot more free throws than their opponents take, which was an old Bo Ryan stat that was really great for us. And you're right. Up at the end of the game, that literally was a microcosm of many parts of the season where John Blackwell and other players were just not locked in that very moment. Like, Nick Boyd drove in the lane, as you already said it, like, John Blackwell just, so nonchalantly just walked into the lane. It is painful to watch. Anyone who's ever played basketball, if you know that Nick Boyd's going to go get a layup. Also, first of all, if Nolan Winter is going to be down there, that's one thing, because then he can have a quick dish pass to Winter, and Winter just hits it up. Winter being down there was fine. You can have one guy down to help, and you can dish over if you need to. But when your guard just walks in there like he's just forgetting what's happening, and then all of a sudden now there's four guys in the paint that are looking to block Nick Boyd's shot, because guess what, Nick Boyd, we were playing a lot of solo ball, so that's exactly what was happening. And then Nick Boyd was going to shoot. They knew Nick Boyd was going to shoot. I will continue to say our late game executions are horrendously bad, which we're going to get into late game executions in a minute. But yeah, you put up a comment up here.
Yeah, Stephen K, I think this is all we can hope for without increasing NIL budget. This is not an NIL issue. This is a coaching issue. Like, when players are doing stupid things on the court, you have to put that on the player. Yes. But as a coach, they need to know what the hell they're doing at the end of the game. And if they're not still doing that at the end of the season, there's a problem. Like, you're not getting through to whoever. That's something is not locked in. And we've seen it throughout this season the entire time. Like, we were not the less talented team in this game. We were not the least talented team the last 3 years. Like, BYU is a game that should have been a coin flip, and it was, for better or worse. That was a really good team that we played. But that is a game where you're going in, you're the higher seed. It's not like you're a bad team. You don't get to say, well, if we just have better players. Like, that is a cop-out in this case. Like, this was a coaching issue. Like, and I'm not just crapping on guard here, but the results are what the results are. Like, he is consistently not winning games as a higher seed in the tournament. It's one thing if you're an 8-9 game. It's another thing completely when you're a high seed.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that. And we're going to talk about Greg Gard, obviously, at some point in this show. You can't have this show without talking about that discussion. Obviously, defense and rebounding were two big issues in this game. They dominated us on the boards at times. They were owning it. They wanted it more. And as I said, one of my keys to the game was defensive and rebounding intensity. All we had to do was bring it. Now, listen, I want to say this, and I didn't say this at the top of the show. Credit to High Point. Those guys played their asses off, okay? They wanted it. That is a well-coached team, very well-drilled. They are not the most talented, but they're probably giving Arkansas fits right now. I think I looked at the score. They're up a little bit. Like, they're giving them fits. They're a difficult team to beat, yes, but we beat Michigan on the road. Don't give me that shit. Don't tell me we can't beat them. Don't tell me that we're not good enough for that. We are, and we don't need to run into these buzzsaws all of a sudden and just like, oh, we're going to fold like a house of cards. No. We have to do this. Question from Badger Fanatic in this vein says, this era is different. You can't drill defensive concepts as well as Bo could for 4 years. Can you react to this? What are your thoughts on this, Justin, as far as like the era being different with defensive tactics?
I think that you cannot, like, I would agree that as the course of the season, early season, you can expect teams to not be quite as good. I think you can still drill every bit as much. I think it's harder because your roster like flips every year. However, you can have guys that become decent to good defenders in one season. We've seen that happen before with players that they just get confident and get better and get more consistent at what they do. Heck, we saw it this year with Rapp. Like, he got better as the season went on. The issue with this team was they have games where they just fall apart and they're terrible defensively. And this was one of those games where they were, I don't know if they got sped up or what, but they were bad at keeping their man in front of them this entire game. And I don't think that that is a reasonable, like, reason for not doing it. There are still teams throughout the country that are very good defensively. Michigan's one of them.
Yeah, dude, for sure. Michigan
was good, very good the entire season on defense.
Look at Iowa. Look at Iowa defensively. Yeah. They were like
the number one field goal defense. They have a brand new coach.
They were so stifling to Clemson yesterday. It was insane. I was like, wow, but that's the thing. Like, yeah, listen, this whole narrative of like, okay, we're a strong offensive team now. We play different. Like, we're going to have to give up some on defense. I'm over that. I'm over that argument. I'm over any of this thing with defense. We have to stop being such a porous defensive team. Like, are you kidding me? We are Wisconsin. We do not play bad defense. We've been played really bad defense for 3 years. And it was all coincided with the offensive flip. Now, I appreciate that. I'm okay with us playing five out. I'm okay with us shooting threes. I think some of the offensive actions this year were brilliant. But you have to be able to bring it on the other side. So what that means is you've got to have guys that prioritize that and then can play man-to-man defense, that you've got to have guys that can be good on ball defenders. You've got to have guys that are strong. You've got to have rim protection, for God's sakes. Like, there are things that we need to get. I understand that we've had a good regular season. I understand we've had some great wins, but all that falls very flat if you lose to a 12 seed in the tournament. So if you want to change that every single year, these last 3 years, it's been defense, defense, defense. BYU ran us off the frickin' floor last year because we had no defense. I would really like to see a team like ours, which many teams out there have this, that can play good offensive sets like we have, but can also not be so frickin' porous on the defensive side of the ball. I don't buy any of that. We absolutely, there's coaches that do it. McCollum obviously has done it at Iowa. Many people can do it. It is unacceptable to be this poor defensively. And if you need different players, then go get different players. Because I'm so tired of seeing straight line drives, wide open threes, and just getting to the rim, no problem. Hello, where in the hell has our defense actually been? It's not good enough, and it needs to stop right now.
Well, I mean, here's the other part of this. Who do you look at on this roster that you could say going into next year could take a big leap defensively? I think the two bigs have a chance to get better defensively and become solid defenders. But there's nobody that I look at and say, these guys are going to be above average on defense. We're actively probably going to get worse defensively based off of what's still on the roster. Maybe Hayden Jones becomes a guy with his length that's capable of being a pest defensively. But I don't think we have anybody with the quickness or athleticism to really be able to lock down on the wing. I don't think there's anybody, if depending upon what happens with Winter, if he leaves, that you feel confident can be disruptive in the lane at all. And even Winter is not exactly a pest in the lane. Like, he has times where he can be really good, but he also has times when he's just kind of there. Like, there's nobody on this team that I look at and say, this guy has a chance to be a really high quality defender. And I don't know who you bring in. Like, we seem like we're leaning so heavily to the offensive side of it now, where it's like, you know what? You can also just get a guy who's just a good athlete that brings athleticism that is a kind of work in progress on offense. And that can be your goal, to develop him offensively to be more than a guy who's just a hustle player. But sometimes you have to accept the fact that a guy may not be a stud on offense, but really helps your defense because of his ability to move and do things.
Listen, by the way, the next time we are a 5 seed and we play a 12 seed that's purple colored, I'm not even going to watch the game. I'll tell you we're going to lose. Like, the flashbacks of JMU are just constantly in my head. It's horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Do you think Winter, like, first of all, there were so many close calls in this game. Like, if any of those crazy ass threes don't go in, we win the game. If we make one bucket, we're up 62-70, probably win the game. Like, there's so many things that had to happen. But the thing is, it didn't, because we're in this close game. We should have been up by 20. We should have been killing this team. If Winter was healthy, do you think that makes a difference? I think probably on the rebounding it does, and it's probably sneak.
Yeah, I would say that's the only spot. I don't think that it makes a – like, we probably win the game if he's healthy, but I don't think that it substantially changes the score. We probably win, like, 87-82 or something like that. In this game, like, people can look at Winter for what he is. Like, he still played solidly yesterday, despite the fact he was not 100%. It wasn't like he was going to go off for 25 points in this game. He probably ends up with something like a 12-9 or something like that. And yeah, it's a nice day. Maybe he grabs a couple of rebounds that we don't normally get if he's in there playing more, which probably helps. But you had size advantage in this game, and you had guys with size that were out on the court. There's zero reason why, and this has been going on for years now. Like, how many times did you listen to me just go nuts seeing Stephen Crowell have one freaking rebound in a game? And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why is your guard getting seven boards, but yet your big man can't get more than two?
We would have won this game with Stephen Crowell. I hear you on rim protection, rebounding, physicality. Clearly, we need that. Clearly, we tried to get that this year, but the money wasn't there.
On the perimeter that was capable of slowing down a guard with some level of like athleticism and speed.
And Boyd
wasn't able to do it.
And that's what it is. Like, you and Ryan said it best on the reaction show. You need one of them. You got to have either perimeter, you got to have a lockdown perimeter defender, or you got to have a rim protector. You can't continue to go into seasons with neither. It's not going to work at all. I wanted to go here next. And Mike 78 teed us up well with it. He says, what happened to drawing up a play at the end of the game? Just not having someone go one-on-one. Listen, and I'm going to get your take on this in a minute, but I'm going to just go off for a second. I am so sick and tired of Greg Carr's late game execution. What in the hell is he doing? You just go back at the Big Ten tournament. Let's go look at that game where Ty John Blackwell shoots a 7-foot from behind the line 3-pointer as our last second shot to win the game when we're tied. What is that? Every single time in this game where we needed a bucket late. Now listen, Nick Boyd kept going. He was driving there, but everyone knew what was coming and nothing changed. And he missed two consecutive runs because we didn't pass the ball. And I have no issue with Nick Boyd making a play. And had Nick Boyd made one of those shots at the end,
Blackwell doesn't drag his man down there.
Had Nick Boyd made one of those shots at the end, then we would be talking about a different story. We would still be frustrated with the late game situations. I certainly would be. Call a timeout and draw up a play. How can we run such great offensive sets time and time again throughout the entire game? But then when it matters at the very end, we're just, nope, ISO ball. Which, by the way, is Bo Ryan did a lot of that too, which annoyed me. And that just hasn't changed. And he needs to change this. We need to hire an assistant coach that can come in and be like, listen, we're going to work on this late game stuff because it's a problem. It has happened in absolutely at least 10 games this year. We've had poor late game execution, which some games we won, some games we didn't. And then again in the tournament, again the last year, like you every single time we have a big loss, it's poor late game execution. And sometimes we won. We beat Illinois. We beat Michigan. We had some situations where it worked, but that doesn't mean the planning was good enough. That doesn't mean that what Greggard is doing in this regard in late games is working. It's not working. Give me your take on late game execution.
I mean, I've hated it his entire time, and I actually hated it dating back to Bo Ryan at times. Mm-hmm. Nothing has made me angrier than watching the guy dribble the clock down for 15 seconds and then jack up a step back three when Chucky used to do it. Boyd going downhill, I can live with. Like, he's attacking the rim. There's a chance you get a foul called. Or, I mean, sometimes they'll let him play. Like, that's going to happen. But Boyd is also the type of guy who's capable of just flat out beating his man. What he can't do is have his teammate come down the lane and drag a guy right into the play. Now, this is something that I completely agree with you. It's something that needs to be fixed outright simply because it's like, why? Like, we've kind of heard that this is kind of what we were looking for no matter what, like from guard before. He's like, oh, this was I was fine with how it played out. It's like literally any NBA coach doesn't do things this way. Unless you have Michael Jordan and you're like, he's going to hit that, you know, like what Michael did against Utah, where he's just capable of just beating his man and then hitting that step back. When you have a guy who's one of the best mid-range shooters in NBA history, you can afford to do that. And is also one of the best athletes at that position. You're letting guys ISO that are, and Boyd is probably the like top end of this, but you've never had a player that is not flawed athletically that you're trying to ISO up at the end of this. Who are the one guys that we probably would be okay with potentially doing this? There's two guys that I'm fine with having the ability to ISO at the end of it. Probably Frank Kaminsky and probably Sam Decker. Those are the only two guys that I think I've seen in my time of truly being Devin Harris too.
I was going to say Devin Harris, yeah, and maybe Johnny Davis.
But those are the only guys. Davis at times, like if you put a really good defender on him, would struggle.
Sure, he would.
But those guys were capable of beating whoever was across from them, whether they were an NBA type guy or not. And that's the thing with this team is like he'll sit there and he'll just be like, go out there and make a play. And it's like, well, you're part of this too. Like you can set them up to win. Like you're putting them in the best situation possible for them to have success. When you're just telling them to go like play off the cuff like that, that's not setting them up for success. Like you're only doing half of what, you know, you can to make that happen. Half of it is mental. The other half of it is actually physically going out there and executing. And you're just throwing the mental part of it out the window and saying, well, you've been playing the game this long. You know what you can get away with against this guy. So go out there and do it.
I mean, there isn't a Badger fan out there that doesn't feel like our late game execution is piss poor. Yet it doesn't change with Greg Gard. It's shocking to me. Listen, I've given Greg Gard a lot of credit this year, and we're going to talk about Greg Gard next. But like, I just feel like there's something's got to change with him, man. He can't keep doing this. It really pisses me off. Like, just make some changes. Figure it out. Like, and if you are going to run ISO, call a timeout and tell everyone to stay the F out of the lane. Because then you have a true ISO situation. And if someone helps, boom, there's your pass. There's your shot. And I would take a wide open three. That's fine. I'm not going to hate that one bit with how well this team shoots the three. If we'd have taken a wide open from Blackwell in the corner, fine. But having three guys converge on Nick Boyd, and listen, Nick Boyd was trying to make a play. I'm not going to blame him as much as I'm going to blame the fact that the setup was shit. And like he had nothing to do.
He beat his man off the dribble and was going in there. And it was like a guy was in the lane that should not have been there. Like there's zero chance if Blackwell's sitting on the 3-point line that there's anybody there. He just beats his man and scores. Instead, it gets blocked because that guy is sitting basically on the block because Blackwell's below the free throw line for whatever freaking reason.
He was in the paint. He was literally on the block. What is he doing down there? Was he going to get a pass? Because
if he was prepping to give a screen, like then I would understand. Was standing
right next to him, so there were literally two guys on the block, just like with their allowing their guys. But here, you want to go defend that too? Go ahead. I'm just going to stand down here so you can defend that shot. What the hell are we doing? And Shaden says it right. End of the game has been an issue for years. Sure has. It's going to continue to be while this man is our coach. Let's talk about that now, Justin. We've had discussions round and round for the last couple of years about this. My opinion is pretty clear. I will give it, of course, again, but I'm going to start with you on this. And I want everyone listening to this, whether you listen to it or listen to it live or in the comments later, I'm curious. I want to try to get a sense of what the fans are out there saying. I want to put your answer in the comments. Very simple. Is it time to move on at this point because of all these situations in the tournament? Like everything you look at in the regular season, you look at this 3 straight years, we're losing on our home whites, higher seeded team. 5-3-5, we lose. We don't get to the Sweet 16. Should we fire Greg Gard? Justin, your opinion.
I can see why they won't. I personally have higher aspirations than this, and this is unacceptable to me. And I said it when we were going into the tournament, like, this is a failure if we lose to this team. We have no business losing to High Point. And I stand by that. We have no business losing to High Point. We were the better skilled team in that game. They played harder, and they got it done when they needed to, and we didn't. And I felt like there was effort portions at times, part of that being mental, where guys just didn't seem locked in and knowing what it was. And it's like, you're not taking this seriously? Like, the real teams that are out there looking to win this tournament come out and handle their business. They get up 25 right away, and they're just like, we're going to coast. We're going to beat the crap out of you and then just save our energy heading into the next game. And we did that for 5 minutes of the game, got up 15-5, and then just let our foot off the gas and started playing with like total morons the rest of the game.
So to be clear, if you're Chris McIntosh sitting in that chair right now, are you firing him? You would fire him. Okay. Listen, and there are a lot of people that have that opinion. Okay. And I understand that Tyler Strieber, good friend of the show, says, yes, strive for more. We've seen Greg's ceiling, and it's not up to our expectations as fans. Any delay in trying to achieve our expectations is malpractice. Okay, Tyler. Tyler's laying down the gauntlet out there, man. Love that guy. Okay, so my take is the opposite of yours. And this, and listen, I want to say I totally hear all the understanding.
Can I say one more thing before we get into this?
Yeah.
I don't think, like, here's my issue when people say that he needs money. And my perspective on this is we, other than BYU, we have not lost to a team in recent history that has been more talented and has had a better roster than Wisconsin.
That's a very fair take. Yeah.
That's nothing to do with money in those games other than BYU is probably a better, like, talent team.
BYU has a lot more money than we do. Okay, so listen, my thought is, like, when I get asked the question, is it time to get rid of him because of the tournament? A part of me certainly was like, God, just get rid of this guy. We can't do this anymore. But then I look down the street at Camp Randall, and it's very simple to me. My answer becomes very easy. Hold on, let me say this. My answer becomes very easy because I've always been a high floor guy. I will continue to be a high floor guy. And we did go 14-6 in the Big Ten Conference this year. We had wins at Michigan, at Illinois, home neutral Illinois, at Purdue, like fantastic wins. We clearly adapted offensively. Things must change, yes. But honestly, I have no interest in starting over from a guy that at least gets us to the tournament. And yes, he needs to do something to change. And he, like, listen, 3 years ago, we said he needed to change. You and I both said this, and he did. He changed offensively. We look much better offensively now. He has to continue to adapt. And if that doesn't happen, then eventually that time will come. But listen, I am so devastated by what's happening on the football field right now. And when you change, the floor can drop out. We know this. We could end up like a lot of other programs that just lose that whole floor and have to spend years building it back. I don't want to do that. I'm not happy right now, but I do believe that Greg Gard deserves to keep his job. And I also believe that Greg Gard deserves more NIL money because he has pulled three great transfers the last 3 years, AJ Storr, John Tanjay, and now, of course, Nick Boyd. Nick Boyd being the best. And if he gets more people like that and can get that athletic size that you keep talking about, that rim protection, I agree with you. He can get those guys if he's given more money. And I'm not saying he's going to take us to a Final Four, but I am saying that I still believe that maybe he can with the right players, but he has to adapt. And I will say that, and you can keep the receipts on that. He has to change, but I don't feel like it's time to make a change, man. I really don't. And I would be pretty devastated if they did. Also, my opinion, McIntosh definitely will not do that because of the football program. He has got way too much shit to deal with right now trying to get Luke Fickell up to par, and that's just not going to happen.
You and I just have a different, like, we have different perspectives in terms of how we view it. And mine is simple. It's like, if we're not striving for excellence, we're striving for mediocrity. And that doesn't mean that he hasn't done something. Like, I can understand why you want a set standard of, like, this isn't, the bottom hasn't fallen out of this. But my perspective on it is this. You hire slow, fire fast. In other words, make sure you do your due diligence when you hire somebody, and make sure that if you feel like it's the wrong fit, you get rid of that person, you move on rather than drag your feet on it. You can use that for the same perspective when it comes to Fickell, and I can understand why people would look at that. Like, Fickell's had some things he can blame, but I would have fired him too. And I would have said the results are not good enough. And I would not have let this play out. And maybe he pays off this year and he ends up turning it around for Wisconsin and the football team's really good. But my perspective is pretty simple with it. It's like, if somebody's not meeting your expectations, you move on. And way too often in college sports, they'll sit on somebody and let them be ineffective for 3 or 4 years and not make a change. And there's way too much money at play. And that's part of that is contractual. Stop signing these guys to these massive buyouts and saying, if we fire you, you're going to get your whole contract. You know what? I'll pay you good money up front. You want to have $4 million, $5 million, $6 million a year? Fine. But that contract, when it ends, you're paying. You're paid on an annual basis. And hopefully they get that through their thick skull that they need to do that. What are you going to – when it comes down to it, what's going to happen? And it wouldn't, like, here's the issue with this, contractually speaking, in college sports. It wouldn't work right now because you're going to have agents that are like, you're not taking that deal. We're going to find somebody that's going to be willing to pay us for the long term. You could find somebody that's a good coach that may not have the accolades associated, meaning he's not going to have that reputation as being a top coach, but he could be a really good coach that you'll get for $6 million a year just because you're paying him $6 million for that year. And that guy will come. You won't get the high name guys because they're going to want their whole contract guaranteed. But I think that that needs to change in college sports in general. And I think you need to look at it and say, when somebody's ineffective, we need to be able to let you go. And if that's, you need to bet on yourself. And that's the exact attitude I would have towards a coach. I'd say, listen, why shouldn't I fire you if you're bad? Like, we can have conversations if, like, you have injuries or whatever that end up costing you in a given season. But if you're ineffective for multiple years, I should let you go.
But he's not ineffective. Like, okay. He's not ineffective.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's a bigger picture view. But I'm saying, when it comes to guard, what I have to take a look at is, what is Wisconsin's expectations of what their role is in college basketball? We are better than a team that loses in the first round of the tournament.
I agree with that. And
I'm not, like, asking for Sweet 16s every year. Like, some people think that we should be doing that. I think if I'm Wisconsin, I think you should be getting to the round of 32 every year. Like, upsets happen, sure, but, like, you absolutely should be getting at least one win. And maybe every third or fourth year, I expect you to make a Sweet 16 run. But that's about it.
Tyler Strieber, Rajiv, you're my guy, but I don't like the high floor take. That feels like settling to me. You can't be mad about losing to High Point if you're willing to be complacent. Scared money don't make money. So here's what I would say to this, okay? Here's what I would say, Tyler. And this is a very fair take. I love Tyler. He brings very strong opinions, and I appreciate that. So here's what I would say. Had Nick Boyd made that shot yesterday, had that number 99 not pulled crazy balls out of his ass and three-pointers from the middle of nowhere and falling off to whatever he was doing, if he missed one of those shots, we don't lose that game. And I don't think anyone is having the fire guard take right now because we're still in the tournament, and yes, but that's the difference. I'm listening, and I hear you, we lost, and I'm pissed about that. But that's literally one bounce of the ball away from being in the round 32. Last year, it's one bounce of the ball away from being in the Sweet 16 if Tanjay makes that shot. They shouldn't have been in that game. That I hear the take. But literally, it's one bounce of the ball, and we're playing in this game right now against Arkansas, probably playing up to our opponent, probably playing better. Maybe we win. Maybe we go to the Sweet 16. And then no one is saying fire guard. So I just think a bounce of the ball is not a fireable offense. Like, well, I just think now if you don't make the tournament, that's a systemic problem, and that's a problem. But he's a five seed. He has to start winning these games. I hear that, but I am a high floor guy because I don't want that. I don't want to be a fan of a team, Justin, that doesn't make the freaking tournament. I hate that. I've seen so many friends, you know, they can't watch tournament. The team's never in it. I don't want that. I like being in the tournament. I like having that. So I'm never going to say off one bounce of the ball that you fire a coach. That's my retort to that.
You can't not fire a coach because you're afraid of failure. You have to assume that you're a smart enough person and you're good at your job that you're going to find somebody that can be successful. Now, that doesn't always happen. You have to take a look at that. But the bigger picture is this. We're not angry about this because of one game, though. The reason why he's getting the fire hate is because he's done this multiple times. And that's why people are looking at it and saying, this is just another instance of him blowing a game like this that he has no business blowing. Now, I'm like, again, I have my issues with him is losing this game is not, to me, again, a talent issue. Like, this is Wisconsin was the more talented team in this game. This that then comes down to it is a coaching issue. And I have to say, you should not be losing these games. So I have to look at it from him and say, hey, this is a problem. And I understand what you're saying. I can appreciate the perspective you're having. I wouldn't be calling for him to be fired if, like, he's had, was it three times now? He's lost as a five in the first round. I think he's been upset three times.
It's certainly JMU and High Point. I can't remember the last one. But, yeah, I mean, he's upset a lot. We've lost three times on our white jerseys. That's an upset. It's terrible. A good comment I put up here earlier from Will Hanna. He says, very simple. Justin is willing to take a shot on grass being greener, and Rajiv is not. And that is the question. I agree with that. And I think that's, this is where the fan base is split. I'm definitely on the side of no. Like, he's a good coach. Yes, this sucks. And yes, it's not acceptable. And yes, things need to change. But I don't think it's worthy of fire because I am worried about that grass. I am worried about it. Like, I don't want a coach that comes in here and sucks. Like, just look down the street, buddy. Like, that's all you got to know. 5-7, 2 years. It's like, we're dealing with this already, and I just can't deal with it again. And also, I think with more money, with NIL actual funds, Greg Gard's going to find gems. He finds it every year. If he would have got that guy from Villanova that he wanted, if he would have got a rim protector, another big, like, we probably wouldn't be in this situation. And I think that is something that you have to take into account, because we know a school like Indiana had a $32 million roster this year. They didn't make the freaking tournament. We're nowhere near that, and we're a 5 seed. That there is an element of coaching. And by the way, I came on this show as pissed off as I can be. I'm not trying to be the ultimate guard defender, but I just think you got to put it in perspective.
How much money did Indiana spend on their roster?
$32 million.
Who the hell were they spending it on?
Exactly. they're one of the highest rosters in the country. And they didn't make the tournament. It's crazy. It's like, so listen, let's just wrap up the basketball discussion and we'll go to football, obviously. But anything else you want to touch on here? Like, I understand the great thing. We're obviously not going to agree, and that's fine. We're going to have this debate again in the offseason like we do every year. But, like, anything else you want to just get off your chest about this basketball team?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when we started talking about it, I don't really have qualms if they keep him. It's fine. But this can't happen. You can't continue to have this and not have conversations about it, because – it's one thing to have regular season success, but this is like, it's like watching your favorite team make the playoffs in the NFL or Major League Baseball and get booted in the first round every time. Like, you look at it and you're like, I want to see more. Like, this is brutal for me to have to watch it and just see my team get their teeth kicked in every time they make it to a postseason.
Yeah. Ryan, good comment here. I think this is a fair take. There's a better chance Gard takes a step and makes a run than Wisconsin hires a guy who consistently is a 5 seed. I think that's where that line is. And I think every Badger fan's on one, they're on one side of the line. I'm curious what everyone thinks. Please put your stuff in the comments. I'm no wrong opinions here. Like, Tyler obviously disagrees with me. I respect that. I love that we had a good back and forth there. I think it's totally reasonable to have any opinion you want. I'm just of that opinion that I don't want things to change right now. Zach Bart's guard is Matt LaFleur in a different sport. Yeah, I mean
that's Zach, pretty accurate.
Listen, Zach was also one of those guys that wants him to get out there, and I get that. I know there's a lot of people that listen to this think you guys are, Rajiv, you're nuts for wanting to keep him, but I think it's also an emotional reaction. If you're like, it's if you're fire guard, you're fire guard, that's fine. But it's we also just lost this crazy game, and I do hear that it is unacceptable. But it just sucks, man. I'm sad. I'm just so sad. I've been so sad all day. I've been watching a little bit of the tournament here and there. I'm just like looking forward to this game at 6:45, like my time tonight was when the High Point game started. I'm like, we have to do the show at that point, because I just can't even like, I can't fathom turning on the television right now and seeing what that score is. I think it's halftime now, but like, oh God. Let's switch to something a bit more positive. We're talking spring football. Spring football practice has started. Two practices are in the books. Our good buddy Ryan was at the one a couple days ago. We've read all the reports, and so we're gonna quickly touch on like what we've heard. So I'll come to you first, Justin, and then I'll touch in on that. And then we're gonna do a couple way too early superlatives just for some fun with spring football. But what are some things that you've heard that piqued your interest and that you want to touch on today?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me is obviously it feels like defensively, I feel like they have some pieces that they're really confident in. The two linebackers are going to be just, I think they're going to be absolute stars. And it feels
first
like
team all Big Ten, baby.
Yeah. But it's not, it's beyond that. I think John Kamara is going to be a problem. I think Thomas Heiberger, like, what I expect to happen is I expect teams to try and take those two out, Posa and Cooper. And I think you have two really high-end athletes that are going to be probably less heralded and probably every bit as big of a problem because of the fact that they're as athletic as they are. I think that they are likely to have hit on their corners. Like, there's a better athletic pedigree that Wisconsin is getting in with the cornerback room than what they've ever had. Kai Bates, Bryce West, and even Javon, what's his last name?
Robinson.
He's a fourth, like a 4-4, like a low 4-4 guy at corner. He doesn't have a ton of size, but nobody's going to run by him. And the other two guys have a ton of size and a ton of athleticism. And then you have a guy in Burks who is a really experienced safety and is a quality player. And then apparently Van Dinter is a guy that they feel are very high on, who is, I think he's been sitting around with the first team a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I feel really good about where this team is going to be heading into the season defensively. I know a lot of people are freaking out about the offense in the first practice, but it's like 10 new guys.
Yeah, so let's touch on that quickly. There were up to, I think, 5 interceptions thrown in the first practice. Our buddy Ryan was there. I talked to him on his way back to Madison, our way back home after that practice for like 45 minutes. And one of his quotes, though, was Colton Joseph is fast as hell. Like, that's pretty nice. I love that. I love hearing that. But yeah, like, so the offense had a rough day. There were some bad snaps. There were some interceptions. This is pretty typical for the first day of practice, though. I mean, the same thing, it's going to happen in fall camp too. The first practice, mm-hmm. you're going to see picks everywhere. That's fairly common. Like, it's just, this is what happens. It's okay. There's a lot of new guys out there. Now, the one thing is practice two, that did improve, right? So there were some big strides taken in today's practice. That Payne over at 247 commented on in Flood. So there was a lot of good things coming out. Certainly, you know, Joseph looked a little better today. Deuce Adams has looked pretty good. Ryan Hopkins apparently looked good today as well. Abu Sama has looked strong. And I think one thing that's nice is that two tight ends have been brought up, obviously. Jacob Harris and Schwendeman have been two guys that have been consistent targets for Colton Joseph, which is great to see as well. And there's some, you know, I mean, it's way too early to identify that. One thing I wanted to talk about was the offensive line. the starting line on day one was Wilkins at left tackle, and then Cubberly, Kowecki at center, Mandel at right guard, and Kevin Haywood at right tackle. I reached out to Nick Osen. I don't think that changed. He wasn't at that practice today. I think Payne was there, but I think that did not change today from what I'm hearing. I don't know that for sure. So I don't know if maybe Haywood slid over to the left today, which I would expect Haywood to still play left. I don't really understand that, but listen, it's very early. Mateos is a new head coach. I mean, new O-line coach. I'm fine with the experimentation. I will say this, Justin. I think you agree with me. I'm very happy to see Mandel playing guard, at least for now.
Absolutely.
That Mandel is a great guard. He is going to be a really good guard, and I like that. And so that's nice. I've been very consistently saying that I'm worried about the O-line depth. I don't really know how it's going to look, but we saw Cherry got in there and Simmons. There's some talent there, but I don't know.
So I thought about this earlier today. When I was kind of trying to get a feel for how I felt about the offensive line. So here's my perspective. For starters, we feel very confident in three guys that I think we know are going to be starters in Haywood, Kowicki, and Mandel. Like, those three guys I feel are probably locked in to start somewhere.
Agreed.
Which means now for the remaining spots, you have guys, and these are the guys that I actually legitimately think are in play for these positions: Wilkins, Simmons, Cherry, Cubberly. That's probably it for right now. That I would say are locks to be involved in the actual happenings. I think there are other guys who have a chance to push. You have somebody like Roski who has a chance to make a jump because he's just a freak. You have somebody like Corey who has a chance to make a leap this year, where maybe he just got better with the additional strength and conditioning and is just ready to take that step and be a guy who's ready to play. Like, there are other bodies. When you start to look at it, you could start to talk yourself into the fact that there may be eight or nine bodies that you're looking at that are trying to get into this. Now, that doesn't mean they all will be, but I think there's guys that you have bodies that you think can be in play, which is, we've had years where, like last year, we're like, I don't know if any of these guys are going to be ready to actually provide us with quality snaps. We had so many young bodies, guys like Mandel and them, like, we felt good about them hopefully pushing on athleticism, but I don't think any of us would have been shocked if they weren't ready to play. Some of these other guys are getting to the point where it's like, you need to be like physically and technique wise ready to provide snaps. And I think that the ones I listed, those guys probably are. They're probably ready to be able to provide snaps to us, which means a two deep should hopefully be a possibility this year that we feel at least somewhat confident in.
So I'm with you at the guard position because there, you know, you got tackle guys like Perry, you got, but at tackle is where I'm like, dude, I know Haywood's there, but Wilkins, Simmons, like, are we comfortable at tackle yet still? Like, this is the thing. Like, tackle was our issue last year. Remember? Like, we had a massive issue at tackle. I'm still concerned that we don't have enough depth at tackle, specifically.
I would argue that. And I don't think we'll know that right off the bat. I know Wilkins is starting there. Like, anybody who knows football, you're talking about a guy who has moved in the offseason from guard to tackle. Like, it's going to take him some time to get his feet wet and get consistent. Like, he may have a good rep here and there, but it's going to take him a time. He might not be showing until the end of spring where you'd start looking at it. He's like, yeah, he had a pretty solid day at tackle versus he may have reps right now where he's just getting blown up, where somebody just makes him look bad. And also, guys like Cheeks and Clayton, they're going to make people look stupid. It's not going to be just our guys.
Yeah, yeah. Mike 78 says, were any of the bad snaps by the starter? The answer is yes, they were. But again, I don't really care about that early. Today it was much better, so I don't really care about that.
I don't think there would be an issue in the season.
Yeah, starting. I mean, Kowecki did have bad snaps, and also Joseph dropped some snaps. So there's that too. It wasn't just the whole thing wasn't quite working as well as it could. So you talked a little about the secondary to start. That's another one. Like, clearly there's athleticism back there with Bates and Robinson. Like, that's really nice to see. I think someone put up a comment up here just a minute ago, and I don't, Will Hanna, I know it's early, but this is the most athletic secondary Bucky has had in years. This may be true. This may be really true. I mean, Robinson is an athlete, right? Bates is an athlete.
And there's a chance this is the most athletic corner room we've had since the Eccles Fletcher,
the ultimate corner room that we had.
Yeah, when you have like two top three round picks, you know, on a team. So, yes, it's very possible. Like, we're talking about two guys that were top 15 corners in their recruiting cycles. Wisconsin's never had. Have we had a kid who's come in as a recruit that was a top 15 corner before? I don't know if we have.
I don't think we have.
Maybe back in the old days of recruiting when it's like you don't really know what you're looking at. Like, clearly Fletcher was a freak of nature when we got him. But I can't remember us having somebody that was rated at that, like, that level of pedigree. Like, we're talking guys that are top 100 type corners.
Bo Dragon. I got to put this up. It's funny. Did I miss the guard is a proven choke artist portion of the show? Yes, Bo, you did. Just rewind the first 45 minutes of the show. We're talking about that. There's plenty. Just don't worry. Just you'll agree with what Justin had to say. It's semi of what I had to say. The name that popped up the most, though, that we got, you mentioned him in your last segment just a little bit there. Sebastian Cheeks has just been going off at these practices, and he's owning it. Like, the disruption in the backfield by him, your boy Hammond Russell, Junior Poyser, Nick Clayton. There's been a lot of disruption in the first two practices. Again, offense. Yeah, hold on. I know offense is weak right now. This is not a surprise. That's okay. But I am happy to see that Cheeks' name has been coming up a lot. And yes, your boy's on the inside.
No, I was gonna say, that's right, Ryan. Junior Poyser making plays.
Listen, again, I hope our defensive front was really good last year. Okay. And if we have an equitable defensive front to what we saw last year, we are gonna be fine. I don't know that yet. I want to see come fall camp. You're very confident, and I respect your perspective. You know a lot about this stuff, and I very much respect that perspective. Well, but I am very concerned still that they're not going to replace those guys like Ben Barton that were just game wreckers up front. I don't know if we have that. I hope we do, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if we have that yet either. What I will say is this is a bigger room than what we had in the past. I brought it up in the Locked On board, and I said, we have five guys that are 310 plus on this defensive line group, and another two that are over 300. And then you have a couple of guys that you're looking for to be potential players in a guy like Anderson, who's 290. He's at the JJ Watt weight, and he looks good. Like he posted his like post workout like updated stuff, and it's like he's a legit fit 290. Like he's a guy that looks good at 290. My perspective on it is there is a ton of size. We don't know what that is yet. You don't know how disruptive it will be, but I feel much better about the possibility of holding ground when you have this many big bodies and some ability to adjust or switch somebody in or out, depending upon who's being productive or not. I think we have some guys like Okpono now is like 318. Like he's kind of at the size you want to see him be at. He's a guy who I think can anchor. Like at worst case, he's a guy who's going to be able to provide reps, be able to do that. We have Dylan Johnson, who's at like 316. So you have some big bodies that have also been in the system now and should hopefully be able to provide some quality reps.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, there's no doubt that the defense has been sort of won the first couple of days. Justin, position group you're most excited about after the two practices, things that you've read and heard, what kind of excites you a little bit?
It's the linebackers are number one. And that's across the board. Like, it sounds like all of them have been really flashing. I think the other one would be tight end. I actually think that's going to be a pretty versatile group this year. We thought Steck could be a guy that was going to play, and it's possible he's really going to have to push to get involved. Sounds like Schwindeman and
Harris.
Who's the other one? Yeah. Are really going to be flashing right now. And I think somebody said that Harris was – honestly, one of the faster tight ends that we've had in a while, which shocked me because I knew he was a really big body and he didn't seem slow to me, but he also didn't seem like a guy that I was watching on film where I'm like, wow. Like we watched Seavers on his high school film and I'm like, this guy flies.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really seen a bunch of those guys at Wisconsin. Even Ferguson was never a guy that I watched and I'm like, he's just blowing by people. He always seemed like he was the tight end that was the 10 to 20 yard guy. Rather than the guy that you're like, we're going to send him deep up the seam and he can beat his man and run away from him. We haven't had the Penn State type tight ends or Iowa type tight ends really here normally.
Yeah. For me, the one I'm most excited about thus far is cornerbacks. I'm really happy to hear what we've heard coming out of there. And frankly, like it's just, you know, with the athleticism needed to be upgraded. And that was a position of a bit of a weakness for Slasher, even though we had a guy like Rico who kind of slowly regressed in his career. So I'm happy to see that's looking good. The next one is the one you're kind of concerned about. For me, it's O-line still. Again, I'm not sure about this. I'm trusting the fact that Mateos is a good new coach and he's going to rework whatever he wants to rework. I'm happy that they're trying things out. I do like Mandel at guard. I would like to see Haywood back at the left side just because he just put him there and leave him there for a couple years. Like he can be our starting left tackle for a couple years. Just leave him there. But we'll see. Like it's very early. I'm not concerned about him playing right now. It's fine. Get figure out what's going on. But that's the position that still kind of concerns me even after the first two practices.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I also think that like, listen, I want to find out that Mateos isn't going to be, we're not going to see any Heinsohn type decisions. And that's no offense to Heinsohn, but that is a, like, I heard numerous people tell me that he was not up to snuff at tackle. And if that's the way we have somebody that's at that position looking through spring football, I don't want to see them starting there in the fall. Like, we're just going to still bank on this. I want Mateos to prove that he's capable of evaluating people and saying, all right, this isn't working. I need to move on. I need to find a different option here because if we go into this where we drag our feet on changes, we're going to be in the same ballpark. And I think that's part of the reason why you look at it, why under Fickell, some of the coaches that he's had have been a problem. They've been unwilling to switch over to other players. Like they've dragged their feet on the changes and to a degree. And maybe they might not have been ready, but guys like Posa and Cooper, like, they were flashing early. We knew what we had in those guys. We probably should have got them on the field repping a little bit more earlier. I know you liked the guys that were in the interior prior to them, but there's nothing saying that you could have given them 10 snaps a game and just gotten their feet wet and let it play out. Like they were, they're that dynamic of players.
Tyler Schreiber asked, what did you guys hear about the running backs? Ryan told me yesterday that he kind of he looked at Abu Sama and said, it reminds me a lot of Corey Clement, which I thought was pretty telling, which everything I've read so far and talked to a couple of people, Abu Sama looks like a stud. Yeah. And that's really great to hear, honestly. And what's not surprising, again, it's obviously early, but the fact that we kept Dupree on the roster is a good thing. In my opinion, obviously we lost Jones, and Sama was a really good, really, really good get from the transfer portal. And I'm excited about him.
Yeah, when it comes to that, people are asking about running backs. We have no idea. We'll know a lot more towards the end of spring camp when they've had consistent days worth of, you know, actual physical contact with the offensive and defensive line to figure out whether these guys have good vision and are figuring, like, are have patience and are finding holes the way they should. It's when you're doing non-contact like this, it's so hard to tell whether
somebody's What's the storyline to end the show today? What's the storyline you're most looking forward to reading about next? Like what do you want to know of these next practices?
I've said all along that I want the offensive line to look like it's competent and that the running game is going to be functional by the end of spring. Like I'm fine if we're still kind of figuring things out with the passing game, I expect that. There's so many new pieces involved in that skill room. And as well as, you know, with all the new quarterbacks, that's fine. Running the football is something that we've got to figure out a way to. We can't go into that game against Notre Dame not being either solid or good at running the football. Like if we want to be competitive in that game, you have to be able to do those, be at that level.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Nothing really more to add to that. I wanted to end the show with this Patrick Neese, who comments on the show a lot. He says, it's been 10 effing years. He can't recruit high school players. You guys are rooting for mediocrity if you want to retain guard. It's idiotic. And there's a lot of sentiment in that in the chat on this. And like I said, I will just end the show like for my comment. I'll go to Justin for his last comments with, this is a very disappointing, very, very disappointing. But I still believe in what I'm still happy overall with the fact that we finished fifth in the Big Ten again. And we were a 5 seed for the second time in 3 years. And I think that if a ball bounces one way or the other, we're in the round of 32. Maybe we're beating Arkansas right now. It didn't happen. It's not good enough. It needs to change. Late game execution, that is a massive, massive issue. And this guy better get some defenders for the next season. Yeah. But I am still squarely in the camp that Greg Gard should be our coach. Justin, your final thoughts before we close today's show.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it like, to a degree, we need to get more athletic. So if you're going to give him more money, it's got to be to get better athletes. If we get a bunch of guys who are still skill and not a lot of athleticism, what are you doing? Like, we've got to find a way to get more athletic on the edges, and we've got to find a way to get hopefully some type of shot blocking on the interior. I'm not saying that you have to have a stud guy who's going to average 15 points on the interior, but if you can get somebody that can get you 8 and 10, I would love it. Like, that'd be great. And if it's just garbage points because he's getting rebounds and dunking or whatever, that'd be huge. Wisconsin just needs some athleticism to get involved in this room, because the roster, you had a guy in Boyd that had that, but he's not a dynamic defender. Like, he was a dynamic offensive player, but he wasn't a guy that was going to be, you know, able to kind of really dominate the defensive side. You got to get better on that side. And that's what we got to do getting forward. If you're going to, you know, make some of these issues go away.
Yeah, it's a disappointing end to what was a successful season until that disaster happened. And we'll live to see another year, hopefully making the tournament and maybe getting to a Sweet 16 anytime soon, or even getting past the first seed. I would really like to not lose in our whites next year when we're a higher seed. That'd be really great. 3 straight years. I'm kind of tired of that. Okay. We're favored in all those games. We've got to win those games. If we can beat Michigan, if we can beat Purdue, we can beat Illinois, we can beat High Point. It's not acceptable, and it needs to change. And it's very, very frustrating. We'll be back next week to talk. Of course, we'll close out the basketball season pretty early. We'll do some closeout stuff. 27 recruiting class is certainly going to be something that I know we're going to be talking a lot about. And of course, spring football reports. So we're going to go real heavy with football leading into, of course, the spring and the summer. As we talk a lot more about it, but we will put a close out on the basketball season at some point coming up too. A sad day for sure, but we appreciate all the support of the show. If you're still listening to this, hit that like button. It's really helpful to the show. Subscribe if you're not already. Thank you so much for your continued support. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.